And we know that the talk of the town, despite college athletic seasons just getting started, continues to be on the national level when it comes to conference realignment. And the Athletic has been doing some really good coverage, specifically around the ACC and its semi-courting of Stanford, Cal, and SMU. Joining me now on the phone is Brendan Marks, who is the UNC Athletics beat writer for theathletic.com. Brendan, thanks so much for joining the program. How are you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So your colleague, Nicole Arbach, has really been on top of all of this. And kind of the most recent reports from her this week was that ACC presidents and athletic directors all had kind of a group of different meetings yesterday. She was also the one who came out and said that UNC is among four ACC schools who at the moment are not sold on Stanford, Cal, and SMU getting added to the conference. We are on the doorstep of the college athletic season today. We know nothing will change for this season, but where do you think we continue to stand with the ACC's talks? And Brendan, do you think that we've heard anything in the last little bit about, you know, anything that could change any of the schools who are the four no's, UNC, NC State, Clemson, and FSU? Have you heard anything that will make them budge?
Yeah, so both great questions. I think the first thing that is probably worth stating is that while, yes, those are the four teams, and they've been reported by Nicole and I think by a couple of other college national reporters, it's my understanding that the rest of those yeses are not even necessarily ironclad. So, you know, it may be a situation where, for example, a school's athletic director is in favor of the additions and expansion, but the school's president is not, or vice versa. It is also my understanding that some of those yeses were, for lack of a better term, political yeses. They were very soft. It was, we know this isn't going to pass, at least not on the first straw poll, so we will throw our support towards it. I will say that I think one of the ways that the ACC and Cal, Stanford, and SMU can convince these schools who have either publicly voted no or who are on the fence or oscillating, teetering, whatever you want to call it, one way that they can convince them to come around to it is obvious by looking at the finances. You know, the reason for all of this, the reason for expansion talks, the reason for even considering adding these schools, which, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything secret here, you know, on its face is kind of ridiculous, that we're going to have California and Texas schools in the Atlantic Coast Conference. You can look at the finances again. And if you can make a compelling financial argument for adding these schools and why it's going to benefit these holdouts, then I do think there is a, you know, I would say better than 50% chance that this move happens, at least everything that I've been told and everything that I've seen reported by my colleagues and elsewhere. So what I mean by that is the ACC is currently looking at different financial models for bringing those schools in. For example, if a school is willing to defer taking any sort of television distribution, ESPN is still going to pay that full yearly television distribution for the school. If the school is coming into the ACC and saying, we don't want that, that's a full $30 million sitting there. Same thing even if they're taking a partial distribution. Again, that means that there is going to be essentially money in a communal pot that the ACC is currently talking about how do we want to divvy that up. And it sounds like the solution to that is going to be performance-based, but that is the way, long story short, that you get the four holdout schools to consider switching from no's to yeses. It's by making it financially attractive to them to go ahead and make these schools, despite the logistical headaches they will create.
Yeah, specifically from the UNC side, I've seen some people kind of poking fun and having fun with the fact that UNC and NC State seem to be conjoined at the hip on this. And we've heard, honestly, state lawmakers in addition to college athletics reporters and fans and officials talking about the importance of those two schools being together. In addition to covering Carolina, you also covered Duke for The Athletic. How interesting is it to you that it's NC State and UNC that seem to be the package deal instead of Duke tagging along too? Obviously, private versus public there, but you know, the UNC and Duke rivalry is pretty special, and I think a lot of people consider, again, those two schools to be a bit more of a match than UNC and NC State in some ways.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you hit on it already. It's private versus public. It is the fact that the only thing that, you know, NC State fans aren't going to want to hear this, but the thing that makes NC State most attractive in the conference realignment, you know, picture right now is the fact that it is tied in the same school system to North Carolina. That is really the thing that gives NC State an upper hand in those conversations, because on its face, just by itself, if you remove the fact that it's part of the North Carolina schooling system, NC State is not nearly as attractive as some of these other brands that we're discussing, as the Florida States, as the Clemsons, as the North Carolinas, even not really as much as like in Miami or Virginia of the world. So it's a really interesting conversation, one that I don't think I or anyone has a clear answer on, but something that I have heard, and I don't think that this is an impossible outcome, is if at some point before the expiration of the current ACC grant of rights, which is in 2036, let's say 5, 6, 7 years from now, if the ACC does have some schools who are offered invitations to the SEC or the Big Ten, like if UNC gets a Big Ten invitation, for example, and it figures out that, okay, we have the cash and we have the funds to get out of, you know, we can pay the exit fee, we can pay to, you know, take back our rights. There is a school of thought out there that UNC will try to leave, and the current state legislature will try to block UNC from leaving independently without NC State, in which case you're talking about a situation where you could potentially have the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill suing the state legislature, which is just a completely bonkers situation. So again, that's a hypothetical. It's certainly not a definite reality, but the fact that those two schools are tied by the state legislature is absolutely a real dilemma. It's something that both schools are very aware of. And right now, that is the biggest thing tying them together. Duke is, because of its private and independent nature, kind of in a different boat. And, you know, quite frankly, Duke doesn't have the same football prowess. So even though its men's basketball brand is right there, the football side of it sort of puts Duke in its own different basket, if that makes sense.
Well, I think, as you and I and many listeners know, it would not be the first time that UNC and the state legislature have kind of come to different odds in recent years over a variety of different things. We're speaking with Brendan Marks, who is a UNC Athletics and Duke beat reporter for TheAthletic.com. And UNC, and in terms of this conference realignment talk, was kind of at the forefront of headlines in the last couple of days when legendary soccer coach, women's soccer coach Anson Dorrance made some comments about the potential for them to add Stanford to Cal, and he said, let them die on the vine. He would rather let those schools kind of flounder without a strong conference to allow UNC to better recruit players. What were your reactions to that? And Brendan, from what you, you know, from who you chat with for your stories, do you think that's representative of how other coaches in the conference might feel? Because that whole conversation, we know Anson is a different breed, but it just jumped out to me as like, you know, that's the stuff that the coaches are worried about when it comes to these conference realignments.
For sure. And I think the only difference between Anson Dorrance and every other non-revenue sport coach at North Carolina or at any school that has Olympic sports success and understands the realignment situation, the only difference is that Anson got caught on camera saying it. Because they all feel the same way. You know, at the end of the day, these guys are competitors. And especially in the case of women's soccer right now, you know, you look at Cal, you look at Stanford, those are programs that North Carolina is competing with for recruits, some of the best players in the country. And so by offering these schools a lifeline, yeah, it is hurting your recruiting. It is also going to hurt you logistically, because if you're North Carolina now and these schools get added, you're potentially talking about having West Coast road trips in the middle of the, you know, academic calendar. How is that going to work? How is it going to work with missing classes? How is it going to work just with the logistics and the travel? Obviously, you know, revenue sports have different situations, but non-revenue sports, Olympic sports, their travel situations are not nearly as glamorous. They're not flying charter on everything. They are subject to the glories of the American flying system and all of the delays that come with it. So, you know, Anson is saying what a lot of coaches are saying behind closed doors. And, you know, I don't blame him for saying that. I think obviously, you know, the nature of it is going to get him in, is a reason why, you know, UNC Athletics has since put out a statement sort of pushing back on a little bit. But I think it's important to note, Anson Dorrance in his statement after he made those comments said, I wish to clarify, I do not wish to apologize. And I think I strongly believe that that is because the sentiment he's expressing is true. It's how he feels. And it's also how a lot of other Olympic sports coaches feel at North Carolina and throughout the rest of the conference.
Well, as I said off of the top of the conversation, all of this is happening under the backdrop of the athletic season for this year is underway, with Dorrance's program already a couple games in. And the moneymakers, and again, the driving reason behind all of this realignment is just about to start. That would be college football. And last couple minutes here with you, Brendan, I wanted to squeeze in a UNC question. Obviously, Tez Walker and his eligibility with the NCAA is still really up in the air. No word yet on whether his appeal is, you know, going to be heard, going to be granted, anything along those lines. So his status ahead of South Carolina looks really in question. From your perspective, he was kind of the big addition for the offensive side of UNC. Do you think that it's fair to say that UNC's offense without Tez is going to really struggle based on how young the rest of that wideout room is? And what kind of expectations should we have for UNC football at the beginning of the season if it's a while before Tez Walker sees the field?
Yeah, and unfortunately, even the fact that the game gets closer and closer against South Carolina and Charlotte, there isn't a whole lot of clarity on Tez's situation. You know, I think I see the free Tez hashtag probably 50 times a day, and the whole situation is kind of crazy. But I think the thing that I'm watching for, and I'll be in Charlotte, the thing that I'll be watching for when I'm there, if Tez ultimately is not able to play, is you do mention the rest of the wide receiver room is very young. I do think that there's some talent in that room. I'll be interested to see how it steps up. But if I'm Chip Lindsey, if I'm Mac Brown, one of the things that I'm looking at is, okay, maybe I need to rely on different positional groups. Maybe I need to, you know, really hone in with my running backs. I think that you would probably see Drake throwing a lot more to running backs in the flat. Obviously, North Carolina's running back room is deep. They've got a number of guys. You know, like George Pettaway, I think he's a guy who could potentially see some more action just because of his versatility, being able to play in the slot, being able to play in the backfield. And then also the tight end room. You know, I think that you're talking about a situation where Drake has already clearly shown a familiarity throwing to Nesbitt and Copenhaver, and that might need to even be exacerbated in the first couple of games if Tez Walker's unavailable. So it is definitely a concern. Like, you know, I don't know that it is quite as dramatic as, for example, if you, like, remove Josh Downs from last year's offense. But certainly North Carolina's offense has been planning as if Tez Walker was going to be its number one receiver, and losing that player less than a month before the start of the season does not make your life any easier in what's already going to be a challenging opener.
Yeah, well, as the Carolina football season picks up and as these conference realignment talks keep going, you can find his thoughts, his reporting on theathletic.com, as well as some other great national reporters covering all of these topics as well. Brendan Marks, as always, thanks so much for the time, and best of luck as the season gets going. We hope to hear from you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.